Mr. Boyne, Reel 6. We were talking about when you crossed the channel in June 1944 in an American LCT. Do you know you don't know the date, we were just saying? D3, so that's the 9th. Right, yeah. That's a fair bit earlier than most of the rest went.
Yes, it was. The actual crossing, we formed up off the Isle of Wight as a convoy. Some of the boats there had the balloons attached to them that keep the German aircraft high. A big convoy, all ships of all sizes. Lovely day, you sit up on top, it was quite pleasant crossing in that respect. The American crew, you were fed. The American rations were totally different to ours, of course. That caused some sort of conversation, that's for sure. But they were very good, very nice caps.
What was it? Was the rations better or worse or different?
Different. Different. Yeah, you had a tray with a lot of little segments in it, and everything went in it. So if you held it correctly, they were separated. If you didn't, everything got together, as it were. But no, they were certainly different, and they had things in there that we hadn't had for ages, you know. But they done very well.
And was the weather good?
Yes, it was.
And where did you land, and what could you see as you approached? You know,
that's the thing. As you got nearer to the coast, the water had, there was flotsam, bits of wood, it increased as you got nearer. There were one American battleship was just off, they're still firing in the Missouri, I don't know. It was certainly a big battleship. It looked enormous compared to everything else around. And that was still firing at coastal installations. And in the range that was firing at must have been at least, 15 miles away at least. Loads of boats popping about. But each of these tank landing craft seemed to have a small flotilla of little but small craft. And they'd be bobbing around. In fact, they were being used as one came alongside, and they asked him what he was up to, and he'd been taking prisoners from the beach back onto transferred onto other boats. They've got a real easy attitude, the Americans, which is the bottom of this boat. You couldn't help but looking into it, and he had a load of skip grenades down the bottom there, and the German skip grenades, you know, and he thought, well, transporting prisoners in this thing with those laying about. But they had quite a cavalier sort of attitude to it, so it seemed. But the landing, the exact place of landing, I really wouldn't have known.
Do you know the area?
I guess, along that side. But sitting on deck, and I had the binoculars, looking at the coastline, and I've really got no idea what I expected to see, but the first thing that came into view, which really is laughable now, was the beach partly playing football. Incredible, isn't it? I can sort of really sort of smile when I think of it, you know, because you didn't know what to expect, and that really was something I didn't know what to expect. The landing itself, they beached, it was sand, and they had a big dipstick where they lowered the ramp and put this dipstick in, and the American officer, because it was still quite high, the American officers told us that the tide there runs out very, very fast, and within the time to start up and move off, the water was about 2 feet, so we only made a splash. That was the last the lorries might have had a bit of a struggle, I guess, or the jeeps and the light on top, and they came off after us anyway. But it was about that, just prior to that, that the German came over the beaches, and my partner shot before he went down was that the cook's up there with his white cook's outfit with a big cigar out of his mouth, just standing on the top there with his Tommy gun. And they threw up everything. Everybody had something to fire. As the aircraft passed over, they were swinging these guns around, and you could hear them hitting the rigging and twanging off the mast and all sorts. But the general idea was to sort of put everything up. It was something to see.
Did they hit anything? Mm-hmm. Other than themselves?
I don't think so, but if it frightened anybody, it must have been us. So that was the general sort, everybody up and bang something off.
So you went off into Two Fort, no bother at all?
No bother at all, no. You had the white lanes to run off on.
Marked by what? Tapes?
White tape, yes. And it was getting dark then. It was fairly late evening, getting dark. The ride then from there to where we parked up was strange, really. We stopped and got off the chutes that we had, the air and the exhaust chutes. Got rid of those. But funny enough, we didn't blow the waterproofing at that point. But the chutes all went into a big ditch, and there was quite a ditch was loaded with these things. It seemed to be a dumping area for these parts.
Did you blow the... Apparently the guns had some sort of waterproofing in. Did you blow that?
No, but they were taken off later. No, we didn't blow them. Then it was a ride in the dark. Of course, no lights anywhere, but as you came up to a crossroads or a junction, somebody would peer out the murk and have a little one of those little torches and aim you left or right or whatever, and eventually we made our way into what was then a large field up against the hedge.
And would that be Cully?
I haven't got a clue.
You stay there about 10 days?
Yes, all of that.
That would be Cully, yeah. So Cully. Just before Epsom.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
How long were you there before the rest of the unit joined you? Because I'm a bit confused about the dates here.
We were there, and after a couple of days, a few more turned up. Each squadron came up, seemed to have two or three more join you. But we were there, I must have been there about 7-9 days, I guess, before everybody sort of enmessed. But a few turned up in little dribs and drabs.
So it was a gradual concentration, more gradual than you disagree with the what it says in them, but you think it was slow.
Yeah.
And how you set up alongside this hedge?
Yeah.
Were you camouflaged at all? Now, I want now to look at what I'm going to do is this bit: look at the conditions of service in France, basically, so see how you lived. You know, so starting with how you camouflaged, because I presume
a big net. We carried a big net. You threw that over, and with branches and twigs and that you stuck those in. But right next door, incidentally, this hedge, there were Osters, the little spotted plane, and they parked them up there. They used to fly them up on occasion. And yet they never stayed there. These things used to be parked, and then the crew would turn up and it would take off, buzz around for a little while, and then come back. They seemed to park it up and then disappear. It was strange to sort of leave a thing like that for a couple of those things there about, but that was their system.
What about
the guardian? Yeah, it was, yeah, the nets and the rest of it, that was it.
Now, what about the bivouac system you use, because you put them
alongside.
How did it actually work? You carried them, where did you carry them, and then how would you set them up?
You carried them on the back on the engine covers,
locked away, I mean covered up or in a box or
like in the top hole, and with your blankets that would all be rolled up in the back engine cover. the Billy used to tie to the top track alongside the vehicle. It had its ropes and you could tie it to it. And your blankets sort of rolled up with it, so you could unroll it, take the Billy out.
So it's like a triangle, just a lean-to.
Lean-to.
How would you secure pegs?
Peg it and you anchor it down to that.
So open at either end?
Either end, yes.
And all the crew would go in there? You wouldn't sleep under the tank then? Or would you?
No.
Were you aware of the risk of sleeping under tanks? Because people did get killed.
They did.
With it on soft ground.
They would dig a trench and then drive the tank over it and sleep in there. But we understood that trenches had collapsed and these things had caught people under it. No, I don't know. I never did, to my knowledge.
Did you dig out the bivouac area at all? So just flat ground?
Because you had a ground sheet. Put the ground sheet down, then the bivvy, put the pegs in. It used to take a matter of minutes.
Now, what about the food rations? Because in the history it says that's where you first really got a lot of compo rations, the box rations. So how do you remember that?
Initially, we had biscuits and we carried some rations that we were given initially, but then eventually these compo rations turned up. A box for a 14-man crew, 14-man rations in a box. The boxes were lettered A, B, C, D, E, F, or something to that effect. Each one contained a different tins of meat and veg. One had bully beef, your corned beef. One that was always sort of like had tin fruit. That one was always popular, of course. The tins, they weren't bad. You had a tin of butter or its equivalent. You had salt, pepper, even toilet paper in there. You lived on those. They told us initially that they would be Brit for a few weeks. It seemed ages, but when we did get those, I mean, it was quite an event. Believe it or not, but prior to that we had biscuits, these army biscuits.
What were they like?
Hardtack, as well known as a good name for them. You had different types of those, and some of those I really liked, believe it or not. But if you had a lot of those, didn't have to make your teeth sharp. It sharpened your teeth, something grows chronic. But at one time we actually pulverised all these biscuits down and tried to make a cake with them, and we had some cocoa or some sort for somebody. Try and break them all down with a sort of flour constituent, but banging away with a hammer, biscuits.
They were that hard then?
Yeah, they were fairly hard. I don't know a modern equivalent you could buy in the shop, you know, but other than like the dog biscuits, you know, that sort of thing. They were hard.
How did you distribute? I mean, you had this box because it was in a wooden box, wasn't it?
It was in a cardboard box.
Cardboard, right. Yes. And how was it distributed? I mean, you got it for your crew. I mean, how did you divide it up and how did you cook it?
The cooking, we had a small stove that you could heat water on it, and then stand tins of this meat and veg or whatever, pork and whatever, standing in the water and let them boil for a while. This is when you had a lot of time to play with. That would also, you use that for boiling tea. Because the tea you had milk and that in it, it was a sort of a composition.
All powdered then?
Powdered, yeah.
What was it like?
Warm, I suppose, would be about as near as you can.
So, while you were at Cully, you don't remember it as Cully, it's me that said Cully, but I mean, while you were at this initial place, Did the cooks not cook for you at all, or was it all, you know, was
I
it just?
I think you fed it for yourself, basically. Yeah, I'm fairly certain you did.
What about special rations, cigarette ration or rum ration?
Cigarette rations, you used to get an issue once a week, I think. About a tin of 50 something. They used to arrive in a tin, airtight tin. they would come up with a quartermaster with the trucks.
Was that in did you smoke at the time?
I didn't.
You didn't at all?
No.
What did you do with yours then?
The lads had them.
Would you sell them or give them? Or swap them?
I suppose in the early days I used to give them. But then there was a point that I started to smoke because the damn things were there. But initially, they weren't anything to me, you know.
Was there any other reason? I mean, why did you start smoking? Because you hadn't until then. I mean,
I played with it really prior to going in the army.
It's looking ahead a bit, but some people, we might as well deal with it now. Some people say that cigarette smoking helps with nerves when you're in action and things. Was that any part of your reason, or was it just?
No. It was if I did a cigarette, it was because they'd be handed round, you know, somebody would give you one and then we'd have it. But no other reason. Didn't smoke in the turret or whatever.
What about rum rations? Did you get them?
I don't remember many. We did have some.
How was it issued?
Pour a big stone jar. They'd pour it into a measure of some sort, and then you tip it into your cup or whatever you had. I don't remember very many. Sadly.
Did you like it? It's quite strong, isn't it?
It's too strong. It's not to my taste in that respect. Because it's there, you drank it, you know.
Did it do you any good? I mean, it was meant to be issued for a reason.
Yeah, I guess so. I never found it did any for me, to be honest. If you were, you know, it wasn't a lifter to me, but I might be different. It's something that I never took to particularly well in that respect.
What about latrines? Did your troop, your squadron, or you have to?
Squadron mostly, I suppose, because you were scattered in some ways. You separated away from other squadrons, and that in many occasions afterwards.
What about the latrines there?
You dig them a small pit and use those. Screen with canvas or whatever.
Would it be a pole system?
Yes, or a pole, yeah.
Did you mind?
When you're more static, you have that sort of system.
Did you mind that sort of thing, or had you got used to that?
It is a semi-use, I suppose. You didn't take a lot too much notice of it.
What about disposal of just the rubbish of life? You know, because all these tin cans and the rest of the rubbish.
Get it home and bury it.
You would do that. You wouldn't just scatter it about.
No. That's what you were supposed to do. When you dig it, dig a hole and bury it. And most of the time, I think you generally do if you have the time.
Were you aware of the importance? We mentioned camouflage, perhaps I should have done it with that, but the importance of not letting tracks develop, not allowing mainly reconnaissance from the air.
Yeah. In the very early stage, this cutting will be formed up there, you, because we were static and as the numbers built up, people, officers would go around and get you to fill in the cover the tracks, try and smooth them out, cover them. They stress the importance of that sort of thing. But only when you were static would you run to those sort of lengths. I think when we left, we moved from there to an orchard.
In the same area?
Yes, we weren't particularly far, and then we were under the trees, tucked under the tree. And I gathered that when we moved out of there for whatever action took place there, they brought in these balloon tanks, put them in out of place purely for the observation. Some turned up and evidently stuck these in the same position. Because the Germans used to come over and do reconnaissance regardless, I'm sure.
Was there much German shell fire or air attacks during that period?
No. The planes used to buzz over, but the dogfights were going on almost constantly. Obviously, you'd get the odd one that was scuttled over on the reconnaissance, fairly low level. But I don't think any firing took place.
Were you aware that the Allies had air superiority? Or
yeah, very much so.
You knew that?
Yeah. Because they really were in superior numbers, thankfully, that we had it.
You were aware of the importance of it then? I mean, what would happen if they had
to come in? Yes, because you really would have been having something unmercifully without it, I'm sure. That was very apparent. I know on one occasion, because there was a lot of aircraft in the air, bombers returning and going out and one thing and another, but we watched a flying fortress that was in problem. One engine was splattering. One engine was feathered, it was dead. And this thing was going around in a circle. And it circled for ages. And eventually we saw them leave the aircraft in the chutes. They came out from different positions on the plane. It was quite visible. And it then headed out to sea, and we watched it dip in out, you know, out to sea. So obviously they set its course and it just dipped in when they came out. But the parachutists landed, a couple of them landed quite near us, and the thing that we were over there to pick him up, and he was still in the air while, as you moved towards him, and I remember looking up and virtually looking at the bottom of his boots. He was coming down that fast, and he hit the ground and rolled over, you know, as they should, I guess. And we collected the parachutes, took the air out of that. We sat him up, and he knocked the breath out of the lad. His flying boots, he had his flying boots and a leather flying jacket on. But by the time we got him unbuckled, a jeep turned up, and the co-driver of the jeep only had a cup of tea in his hand. I mean, you can't believe it. I mean, this thing had driven up with a cup of tea. I dare say he spilt most of it over him, like bouncing about, but I suppose it's the thought that counts. But they went round collecting these, and they evidently all got out, so we understood. But this chap's first words were, you know, are they all out? So there was a lot to watch, really. You could hear the gunfire in the distance.
But you didn't get any of it?
No. And we, one occasion, we walked up to a knocked out Sherman, had a look at it.
A couple of people mentioned that there were an armoured car and a Sherman, British.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the area, and that it wasn't very nice inside. What did you look inside?
I didn't very much. I could see where the hole was, where the shot went, and it was virtually from the welded, through the welded plate, the actual welded plate at the side. That that didn't inspire on with great confidence, I must admit, if that's what the wording would be now. But it certainly was knocked out, and the inside was a mess.
Had it burnt out?
Yes. Yeah.
Did that make you think about the possibility of catching fire, or had you already?
Well,
or did that happen later in action?
My fluke at the time. You didn't have the knowledge that was later to sort of the blank bits filled in later.
Was there any other knocked out vehicles in the area?
No, there was a knocked out gun, a German gun in the area that you looked at. It's a fuel gallery, right?
Any German knocked out tanks?
Cause no, I didn't see one there. No, that didn't.
What about the village that I think's Cully, which you know? What did you? Were the French still there?
There were one or two still kicking about there. The lads that could speak French, and we did have some. I mean, they weren't all just you know. I mean, some had an education that had French, and they could speak with them, and they would be about their business as best they could. But you didn't see them very often. They kept very much.
Was there a cafe or anything to visit?
No, no.
And did you drink any of their drinks? I mean, because they drank different drinks, cider, wine, and Calvados.
Not there. I don't remember going having any of their drinks. It was later that we had Calvados, a bottle of Calvados given us. And
we'll come back to that.
Yeah. It was fairly light-hearted, I guess. Again, the buzz that something was likely, was you were near to something happening, and I don't know, I did portray that. You could sense it was in the air, because everything was leading for it, yeah, coming up to it for it, really.
Now, what it was leading to for you was Operation Epsom,
yeah.
Which I think, now the first day of that was the 26th of June, 1944, and how were you briefed for that? And I better just check, you were in a Firefly, still with Stan Bush, and you don't remember the rest of the crew still at that point. And whose troop were you in at the time?
Still
Lieutenant Hall, right. So, and did that troop have a number?
Three.
It was still number three, right, sorry. Now, how were you briefed about this plan? I mean, did you know that you were meant to cross the Odon and go on the Orne, or did you know about 227 Brigade and the infantry with you? Did you know any of that?
Well, we were briefed. I suppose we were briefed quite well with a sort of board and map, crudely sort of marked out maps and the like. Of what we were going for. The aim of it, and they hope to sort of take by it, I guess. To be honest, it was. They tried to get it across, as it were, but military, it's yeah, fine. That's what you're going for. Let's get at it. You know, let's see what transpires.
What was your morale like? I mean, that sounds like morale was good.
Oh, I'd say it was good, yeah. There's no reason not to be. This was the, I suppose, the culmination of what you, all those strange schemes and scuttling about in Yorkshire was all about, in truth. It started to then, that's the culmination of all of that. The learning curve, I suppose, you could call it these days.
What about your personal fears? You know, I mean,
as I said, it's strange, you know, but I didn't have any in that respect. And I don't think many of the lads like me had at that point. Really, this is what we've been trying to do. We've got a part to play.